Reporting for KVSC News, my name is Vicky Iacago, and I am here with 14B DFL representative, current representative, and running for the DFL seat, 14B, Zach Dorholt. Zach, how's it going?
It's going. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. So pretty much what we're trying to do is we're trying to educate voters about who's on the ballot and, you know, tell a little bit about yourself, and we'll kind of get started with that.
Sure. Well, sometimes I'll just explain what a state representative is. There's 134 state representatives in Minnesota, and we're primarily your most local voice at the state level. So my district, which is 14B, covers about half of St. Cloud, along with Minden and Haven townships. The university is in my district. However, if you go across University Drive, the hockey center is on the 14A side. So it gets complicated around here, especially with St. Cloud being three different counties. These jurisdictional lines, these political lines, they're all over the place. So my first year, I was appointed vice chair of the Higher Education Committee, and that was pretty cool. I got my undergrad and one of my masters here at St. Cloud State University, and as like to remind folks, well, maybe they don't want to hear it, but it was $1,200 my freshman semester, which was not too long ago. And one of our priorities was to address that. And for the first time, you know, since then, tuition was frozen at Minsky Universities. So that was one of my priorities and what you're kind of looking for.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your personal background as well?
Like I said, I got my undergrad here at St. Cloud State University, double major, kind of technically. My undergrad was a community development and just squeaked in one of the film studies there. And after that, I actually got a job in the telecom industry where I worked on land use and zoning for telecom towers, and did that for a couple years and just kind of felt like wasn't the right fit, and eventually went back to grad school for counseling and therapy. So got a master's in rehab counseling and another in marriage and family therapy. My full-time job is, some people don't know that, I'd say a good third of the state legislators actually have a job. My full-time job, I'm a counselor here at the Central Minnesota Mental Health Center, and I work with adults who live with serious and persistent mental illness. It's things like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and now we're seeing, you know, more severe cases of things like PTSD. And so that's what I do, you know, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and when I'm not at meetings for this, and when we're not in session.
Wonderful. So how long have you been a state representative for 14B?
Just the 2 years. So this is my first term. A state representative is a two-year term. So we are the ones who are, every 2 years, you know, you see us on the ballot.
So what type of goals did you have first going into when you were first elected? And then how has your stay in the Minnesota legislature kind of, I guess I would say, inspired you to continue the work that you're doing, mm-hmm. seeing as though you're running again?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, that the priority being not only because of my experience here at St. Cloud State, the university is my district, the Tech and Community College is in my district, and there's a lot of what used to be called non-traditional students, which I just call students now, the people who are in their mid, even late 20s. They're working two or three part-time jobs, and they're chipping away at a degree. And it's become so much more expensive than it was when I was here. And so we started, we froze tuition, we expanded the grant program, and that was just in 2 years. And you have to look at the 10 years prior to that, if not longer, where there was a literal disinvestment in higher education. The state stopped putting money in. When I was here, the state paid around 60% of the cost. Students paid around 40. That formula has flipped. And we just were able to pause tuition. And it may not feel like a lot, but that was an uphill battle. So learning how hard it was just to make a change such as that and expand the grant program is leading me to how we need to become more creative as we move forward with addressing higher ed needs. So that was quite a lesson. Going to St. Paul was almost like going to college. Your committee assignments are like your classes. You know, you get the first day, you look at the roster, who's going to be there from what party, who's going to be on the committee, who's the chair, and what kind of issues are going to be. And if you're interested in that committee, I serve on higher ed, transportation policy, and government operations. you get to hear from some of the experts, not only in the state but in the country, testifying on issues, and it's really unique. And all of these are open to the public, and there were several issues where those rooms were packed, and that was great, seeing people involved. It takes effort to get people involved, especially students. Younger people they're living busy lives, and so this can be my priority as I move on here as well.
Wonderful. So you did talk about higher education. Currently at St. Cloud State University, we're facing about an $8 to $10 million budget deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And they just released the reports this past week saying that St. Cloud State enrollment has declined about 5.1%. With all of that, it has impacted student budgets for student organizations, including athletics as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if reelected, how would you go ahead and work with the state and MNSCU and other facilities of higher education to combat some of these issues?
Yeah, and that's an unfortunate trend we're seeing nationwide, is college enrollment is down. Less students are choosing to go to college. And also, the population isn't as much. I'm a child of the baby boom generation. My parents are baby boom generation. There was that population bump. And everything was great for us in the 90s. All you had to do was go to college and you were to get a job. That's what we were told. And then, market crashed in 01 and they kind of came to a halt. And it's about getting creative. We talk a lot about focusing on jobs for the 21st century workforce. And what can MNSCU do locally? What can St. Cloud State do locally? What do they do best here? And there are a lot more efficiencies that within the MNSCU system. And the MNSCU system is relatively new. It was created in the late 90s, before all the universities and colleges were independent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we need to address from where the efficiencies we can find at the top. The students are doing what they can do and being stretched too thin already. And like you said, the organizations, they're still playing catch up. They're playing catch up from over a decade of disinvestment. So some good things St. Cloud State has done, has partnered really well with some local businesses. The other things we've done is we started to weave in DEED grants, Department of Economic Development, along with the universities. So we've partnered to help, for example, here in town, NetGain is a small computer company. Well, they got a partnership through DEED to team up with the university to have better, not only just community relationships, but what used to be considered apprenticeships, which are, we call internships. And we've just started that. And I think that's going to be a key to making sure that it's affordable for more students. They're getting the experience they need. They're getting the jobs they want. And at the same time, they're allowed to take their time to get an education, not just for a job, but for the rest of their lives.
And looking at the actual segue, as a nice segue into jobs and sustainability that I'm trying to look at as well with this issue of candidates. How do you feel that the St. Cloud area is doing as far as not only creating jobs, but sustaining them and also being proactive for the small business owners here?
Mm-hmm.
And if elected, is there anything that you would do to improve on these issues?
Yeah, well, I too am actually a part owner of a small business, a local bar and restaurant here in town. And what I mentioned is, I don't know if you saw the headlines the other day, St. Cloud has the lowest unemployment rate it's had prior to the recession. And that's much lower than the national average. Minnesota's lower than the national average. And I think that's due to our smart investments. As I mentioned, teaming up with grants that are fulfilling the work skills gap that you hear so much about, whether you tune into the news or maybe your professors or employers are saying we have this job skills gap, and focusing on there. We have created those partnerships through DEED grants, economic development grants. They're small right now. We just, three more just came out the other day for the St. Cloud area. Talon Industries, they're a manufacturer of high-tech steel components, and they need continuing education to keep up with how fast technology changes. We can't just think of it as you go to get your degree and then you're good to go for the rest of your life. We know that doesn't work with the high-tech manufacturing that creates not just good jobs, but careers. And helping folks maintain their viability in these careers, not just locally, but competing at a global level. And that's why folks like Gehringhoff, you heard of them, they're a German company, but they're going to manufacture some more high-tech farming equipment right here in St. Cloud, because they saw the trend and the fact that Minnesota chooses to invest in education. And when you do that, quality jobs come with it. And as far as the small other small business stuff goes, I could rattle off a ton of stuff about the bar and restaurant industry that would make things easier. But we also know that, cover the Star Tribune the other day, 37 new restaurants have applied for applications in the shortest amount of time in recent history. So we know things are doing well. But they're going through a lot of changes, such as the raise in minimum wage, that you know, we need to keep an eye on and make sure that the businesses that may be having a difficult time managing that have the help they need at the same time.
Yeah, that was another big thing that passed through the Minnesota legislature mm-hmm. this year, was minimum wage. How do you think that's going to be impacting businesses and things like that, particularly in St. Cloud, but in Minnesota as a whole?
Well, I have to look at how it impacts people. So often the framework of the questions we are asked is, how will this affect businesses? How will this affect businesses? And I can't look at any issues unless I ask myself first, how is this going to affect people? But we do know when you hear something like the minimum wage, you go to business, right? That because that's where we work, our businesses, jobs, most of us. And the fact around here is we're a service-based economy. And with that, we don't have as many careers. We have a lot of jobs. And I bet you know, and I know several people who work at Target 20 hours a week and 10 hours a week at maybe a group home, and then they're a part-time waitress. That's their full-time job, and they have a college degree. And if wages go up for those folks, they can afford to work maybe just one or two jobs, hopefully just one, and spend more time with the family, spend more time maybe going to school. I made $10 an hour in 1999 where I worked at a bike store. Wages haven't gone up. Cost of everything else has. And yes, it will cause some frustrations. You know, a lot of my friends in the bar and restaurant industry, they say, oh, our costs are going to go up and things. And not to the point where people are going to lose business. I don't believe that. I live it, you know, managing the credit for our bar and restaurant, looking at the payrolls. I saw the adjustments we're going to have to make, and they're doable and they're worth it. You're going to get higher quality services. Likely, the long-term investment, you're going to get less demand on public services. People may not have to rely on public assistance nearly as much. And you know, there's 25 legislators that live in Minnesota's 6th congressional district. I was the only one who voted yes for that minimum wage. So I you know, put my neck out there because I believe that was the right thing to do.
And any other issues that you personally feel, talking about this past legislative session, mm-hmm. the legalization of medicinal marijuana?
Yeah.
Were there some issues with that bill as it currently is passed? And if there are, can you explain like what you would personally want to do to fix it?
Sure. Well, what we passed was probably, if not the most conservative or constrictive medical marijuana bills in the country. And the proponents of the bill were very frustrated with that. I, too, am a little frustrated. I think it should have been opened up to more types of illnesses and diseases and disorders. However, the really unique thing we got out of this is it's not just medicinal or medical marijuana, it's a program. And we're going to actually be doing some research that'll be tied in with the Mayo Clinic. And we'll get some real numbers, some real research done here in the United States. And the problem is, you know, a lot of proponents of medical marijuana or legalizing marijuana in general, they'll point at these studies that have been done, say, in Europe or Japan. But the thing is, the FDA and other agencies aren't going to recognize them unless those studies are done here. So it's a very unique program, technically, is what we pass, is the medicinal marijuana program. So if you get a prescription, you're actually being enrolled in this program. And we're going to get some really, really unique statistics and both qualitative and quantitative data that will be gathered from some of the best institutions in the world. And I'm really looking forward to that. I just wish it wouldn't take so long. And I was really frustrated with some of the very awkward and dramatic opposition and scare tactics to people who weren't willing to sit down and look at the facts of how helpful this can be for some people.
Was this an issue that was brought up by constituents in your district, or was it an issue that you yourself wanted to advocate for?
This was brought up in my district, actually. One of the people who have a child with one of the seizure disorders, they were literally looking to move to Colorado so that their daughter could be prescribed this, because that's what they believe worked. They actually live here in town. And another one, there's two, they believe two couples with daughters here in town who were really part of this movement. I mean, how can you say no when people are asking for the help? So it was probably, if I look at my email list, I heard more about that. It was probably the second most hot topic in my email inbox from people who live in my district.
What was the first one?
Stopping the wolf hunt.
Really?
Believe it or not, I got more emails from people in my district opposing the wolf hunt. It was unique. I think we have there's a large and very concentrated group here who live in St. Cloud who just happen to be very close to that issue.
Interesting. So what other issues do you feel that St. Cloud needs to deal with, and what can you do to help them if elected in November?
Sure. St. Cloud, when you say St. Cloud, I automatically go to the city, the regional center, and what's happening in our community on our streets. You know, I live near downtown, and a lot of my neighbors have seen a lot of changes, and we've seen changes for the better, is my opinion. But with those changes, you see some dramatic differences in the type of crime, or whether it be security fraud or shootings. And we have what's called local government aid in Minnesota, where the state provides assistance to cities who serve a larger base of people than live in it, which is St. Cloud. We call it a regional center. A lot of people come in to St. Cloud to use our services or go to the hospital, come to school here. And we can't really afford to, say, provide public protection for our folks and the people coming in here. And the local government aid went down every single year since 2002. Because of that, we weren't able to hire the support staff the city needed or that the police needed. We had to put a hiring on freeze. So we passed a little increase in LGA, which allowed St. Cloud the ability to hire a couple new officers and hopefully be eligible for a grant to hire a few more. And we've got a great new police chief. And when we hire these new folks, I think we really, really, really really need to work hard on making sure we hire folks who reflect the demographics of our community and who are in touch with the people, not just the problems, but the people. And we're moving that way, but we're still making up, once again, for more than a decade of disinvestment, like I said, in education, the same with LGA. St. Cloud has really weathered some tough times quite well, but we've got a lot of catching up to do with the progress that our city has been making.
You did mention a little bit about the reflecting the demographics. St. Cloud, the city, has a very wide range of demographics here.
Yeah.
Particularly in your district, you've got both colleges here, and you've got a lot of a very young population, but you've also got a very emerging population with the influx of recent immigrants to this city. So how, if elected, reelected in November, would you want to work with these people in order to make them feel included in the St. Cloud community?
Sure. Well, you know, and you say feel included is something that you have to make an effort. You know, some of them will come to you, but really you have to go to them. For example, many of the, you know, the new Americans, the Somali refugees, it's important, I think, that people recognize that, you know, they're refugees first. I mean, and they've chosen to live with us and they want to be part of our community, and it's been difficult at times. So I meet regularly with folks I know in that community. You have to be assertive and not pressure folks to, you know, come to you, but make sure you always have your door open with open invitations. And that means sitting down with them and listening. That's my job. I'm a counselor. I'm a professional listener. And continuing to provide those types of opportunities in a more public arena, which is what we're starting to see. We have we just had like the annual conversation on race. And I think on Saturday here, there's going to be a march for unity and a rally, bringing those conversations out into the public so that the folks who are new to the area, whether it be East or West Africa or South America or from St. Paul or Brainerd or Crookston. We need to have those public opportunities where everybody gets a chance to feel how they fit and can buy into our community.
So let's kind of transition a little bit and talk about transportation. At your rally that happened on Friday, there was a big push about, I wouldn't say a push, but more so a big mention on the fact about you wanting to bring North Star up to St. Cloud.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the issues in transportation that you feel St. Cloud would benefit from if you were elected, reelected, and were working on these things back in St. Paul?
Yeah, transportation, not the sexiest issue, but it will likely be number one issue coming back because this, and once again, here's another nationwide trend where we have a failing infrastructure. We got a little attention in 06 when that bridge fell down. But it wasn't sustained attention. The federal government stopped making investments. So what we have here is the state is up to us now to choose whether and how we invest into infrastructure. And I'm a proponent of multimodal transportation, planes, trains, automobiles, bikes, kites, whatever gets you around in a safe manner. We need to create the opportunities for that to happen. The North Star Rail was supposed to come all the way to St. Cloud, and it didn't. Because of politics. It stopped short of the population center it was intended to reach. And in the past, people used to call that a 100-year decision. You know, back in the railroad days, if the congressperson didn't get that railroad to come through their town, they lost their seat. And it's sad that it didn't, because we're dealing with an entire different entity here, because all I have to do is say North Dakota, and you might think, oh, Bakken oil fields, and if you're on the east side, you're going to see nothing but oil trains rolling through there all day long. You did not see that 5-10 years ago. And because of that, the BNSF, who owns those rails, you know, some of these railroad ways and these rail rights are older than the state themselves. They have the priority for that traffic. And if we were to bring North Star up here, that's going to be the first hurdle we need to manage, is how can we find time and room on those existing tracks, or what are some other options? Do we build a new rail line track? Does it have to just be commuter rail? Can we think of some other options? We do a great job with the link. I'm looking forward to, if I get reelected, I can take the link to Big Lake, get on the North Star, take it to the Twin Station, and get on the Green Line and take you right downtown St. Paul to the Capitol. So you can get from St. Cloud right now all the way to the Capitol without getting out of your car if you live by a bus stop.
Interesting. So switching gears in the last about 6 minutes in our conversation, Zach, let's talk a little bit about the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
How has your campaign been going?
It's different than it was 2 years ago. A, because, you know, I'm an incumbent, and B, it's not a presidential year, and I'll add the third one, C, we don't have those divisive amendments on the ballot. And the nice thing is the conversations at the door have been much less contentious because of the absence of those ballot initiatives that I'm thankful we defeated 2 years ago. So with the general population, older folks, they're talking about, you know, like the meat and potato issues, transportation, education. However, the younger folks, you know, freshmen and sophomores, I go and visit with them as often as I can. The first month and a half of school, it wasn't asking them who they're going to vote for. It was asking them whether they planned on voting, and a large amount of them had no idea there's an election. And that happens if you're, you know, if you're 18 or 19, you didn't vote, you weren't old enough to vote last time. You forget, because this stuff isn't on your radar. But these elections matter. In 2010, this seat, the person who won this race, won that race, won by 12 votes. That's huge. And the amount of people who turn out in a presidential year compared to a non-presidential year is too significant of a number. And it takes more work to get people engaged in a non-presidential year. And it takes more work to explain to them that it's the people closest to you that make the decisions that impact your life the most. I'm talking city council, school board, state representative, you know, state senator. You know those people. They live by you. You have direct access to them. Talk to them. We're real folks. I'm a counselor. That's my full-time job. You see me at the park with my 2.5-year-old daughter, my 10-month-old daughter, you know, I'm hanging out. Feel free to chat. So but it's also been nonstop. 2 years ago, there was over $600,000 spent in outside money on this race. I think that's absurd. One of my priorities has been, and always will be, campaign finance reform. I've chose to abide by the campaign finance limits. My opponent opted out. Once that happened, outside money flew into this race as if it was a U.S. congressional race. And I know a lot of people out there are sick and tired of the mails and the flyers and the radio ads and the TV ads. I want you to pay attention to who paid for those, because I can guarantee you 90% of them were paid for by a political action committee or by one of the parties. They did not come from my campaign.
Getting onto this issue, your opponent, Jim Knobloch, mm-hmm. and ads have been, you know, heard on radio stations, both sponsored by him or sponsored by, you know, PACs that support him. And then you hear ads, you know, that are sponsored by PACs supporting you as a candidate. Mm-hmm. They both seem to be rather negative.
Yeah.
And how are you dealing with this? How are you addressing the issues of negativity in campaigns? It kind of almost seems to, like, to the listener and to the viewers that it's just same old politics.
And that's part of what they want you to think. The outside money is usually tending to drive down voter turnout and make you feel like it's not worth it. That is an effort made by a lot of this outside money. And if you talk to some of the marketing majors here, if they go on the politics side, the sad fact is negative advertising has proven to work over and over and over again. And that's frustrating. I haven't sent out any negative ads or negative mail, and I won't. I'm a therapist. That's bad for our health. My opponent, maybe he's just taking that as being a challenger, so he's attacked me, on my record. So that's, I understand, hasn't been character attacks. But this outside money is just absurd.
So if given the chance, would you choose to accept said outside money to help your campaign?
Well, you can't.
Given the choice, if you literally could say, you know what, no, I want to run this campaign cleanly, would you do that?
Would I choose to
run the campaign cleanly?
I am. I choose to abide by the Minnesota Campaign Finance Board campaign limits. We have a public financing system. That's a choice that politicians here in Minnesota have that they can make. Some of us make it, like myself, to abide by those limits. Some of us, like my opponent, chose to opt out. And we have this opt-out option due to the Supreme Court decisions that basically said money is free speech. And I think that was the most dangerous Supreme Court decision that has been made in recent history. And I'm going to do everything I can to fight it. It's going to be an uphill battle, but this is not a partisan issue. And this is something I think we need to get everybody involved in. We're going to hear it nationwide. If you think things are bad now, 2016 is going to be worse, because this is the practice session for the presidential year. $600,000 in a race for candidates who get paid $30,000 a year. There's 134 of us. We've already estimated that's probably going to be more than $600,000 as of now. So if you think about that, and then the congressional, you know, they say you have to raise a few million dollars to run for Congress. That's insane. You spend, a freshman congressperson is recommended to spend 30 to 40 hours a week on the phone dialing for dollars. Where do you get to work? When do you get to talk to your constituents? So this is something I think that we as a nation bipartisanly can unite, because it's counterproductive and we've got to fight it.
Lastly, why should people vote for you?
This is a unique district. We have everything from potato farmers and dairy farmers to a large population of students. We have core neighborhoods. We have people living under the bridge sometimes. And we need somebody who has a diverse experience background. I'm a small business owner. I'm a therapist. I'm a counselor. I worked my way through college. I paid for it. I worked 30 to 40 hours a week. I worked at Sears in retail. I worked at bike stores. I sold shoes in the women's shoe department on Marshall Fields to pay my way through college. And that's what most of the people in this district have done. They've worked for a living. That's the difference, a big difference. And I know how hard that is. And I think the decisions I've made to freeze tuition, get all day kindergarten in check, widening that lane on 94 to 3 lanes, expanding the River's Edge Convention Center here. We're going to start revitalizing some more buildings on campus, the Eastman Hall, which has been closed since I was here. And I would ask the people, look at how much I was able to do in 2 years. You know, I'm of the 25 legislators live in Minnesota's 6th congressional district, home to Michelle Bachmann. I'm the only Democrat. And you don't get to be that person unless you know how to work across the aisle. And I worked across the aisle and did things not only for my district, but for places in Sartell and Sauk Rapids. And I will continue to do that if you choose to get out there and vote.
Wonderful. That was 14B current representative and incumbent candidate, Zach Dorholt. Thank you very much, Zach.
Thank you.
And reporting for KVSC News, I am Vicki Iacocco.